This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Welcome to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Sean Wade from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust and Love Sport's very own legend, Laurie Kellis. I must say, the atmosphere might not be the greatest in the studio. Newcastle went down to Norwich 3-1 this weekend, but that is not enough to stop those smiles on our faces when a local hero kicks in. I must say, it's a personal highlight of the week for me, but this is the Newcastle United Fan Show. They're laughing at me. I'm sure they're not laughing with me. We are, of course, going to be looking at the game with Norwich, which was a disappointing 3-1 defeat. We're going to be talking to Mick Martin, ex-Newcastle midfielder, also previewing the game against Spurs this weekend, a massive game this weekend after the first two games. But as I mentioned in the talk up before we started, the drama is never far away from Newcastle. 0 points so far, poor performances, a manager who is not wanted, an owner who certainly is not wanted. Steve Bruce out was the call, was the hashtag trending on Twitter for Steve Bruce to go. But before we get into all that, let's take a look now at the game, because very disappointing. I watched it and I've got to admit, I've got my Newcastle soft spot. I had my shirt on the sleeve. I really wanted Newcastle. And I've got to admit, after the first game, looking at Newcastle versus Arsenal, very, you know, decent performance, putting a good impression there. I was expecting something from the Norwich game. From 1 week to the next, looks a completely different side. I don't know what happened. Sean, we start with you. What were your thoughts on the game?
It was absolutely dismal once again. I can't really say any positives from it. Again, funny selection on the bench of four defenders. I don't know what the thinking was behind that, but sure enough, that's what Steve Bruce decided to do for the second sort of game. What positives can we take from it, to be fair? I mean, you can take plenty of positives if you're a Norwich supporter. A cracking hat-trick, by all means. If that was Alan Shearer on the end of that hat-trick, we would be dancing, you know. At the end of the day, it was very reminiscent of an Alan Shearer when he played for Newcastle. Good luck to them at the end of the day. But, you know, myself last week, going into the game, I felt we're going to get a bit of a kicking by Norwich, and I sort of called 3-2, didn't I? And sure enough, it was 3-1. So I thought, you know, the players lacked sort of any enthusiasm. Joe Linton sat down, injured. It took what seemed an age to even bring him off the pitch. And now, like, sort of they're saying, oh, there could be some issues that he's got going forward. But why, when he had asked the bench to come off, why did it take them so long, like, or Steve Bruce, to have him replaced, you know? So a few things within the game that I just thought were sort of very cagey, players playing out of position. They didn't seem to know what they were doing. There was no real direction coming from sort of the bench with Steve Bruce. So again, it's just, we've got Spurs to look forward to. And with that, I think we're going to get an absolute dredging. So, yeah.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're going to be giving you that Spurs preview already. Sean is very damn beat. You're going to make me be a little bit upset, Sean. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit sad. It's my aim in this 1 hour to bring you around, give you a little bit of Newcastle cheer. Laurie, Sean mentioned there, no positives from the game. But is there any? Can you give us a little bit of light? Where can we look to just go, all right, we're moving on to week three. Is there anything we can take from this game?
I'm struggling, to be honest, Charlie. It reminds me, I remember early last season, we had a dismal game that you'll probably remember where Kennedy didn't complete a pass for the first half against Cardiff, and it ended 0-0, and Kennedy missed a penalty right at the end. And at that point last season, it was pretty depressing to be a Newcastle fan, but we still had Rafa. And even though we were playing badly, and even though we had that long run, which everyone keeps talking about at the start of last season, where we didn't do well, I wasn't necessarily as worried, because we knew the qualities that Rafa had and we knew what we had to fall back on. After that Norwich game, I was just deflated. Honestly, when Newcastle are bad, just watching them is just, it's just painful, honestly. And just everything about it is infuriating, how we set up. Why on earth are we playing three central midfielders and then two forwards completely isolated when we're not using any width at all? Our fullbacks aren't bombing on. Like, how are you expecting to bring defence into attack? Norwich completely deserved the 3 points in every single way. A goal flattered us. And yeah, you're asking me for positives. I don't know what positives to give, to be honest.
Am I asking a very difficult question? I'm putting you in an awkward position, trying to look for positives. All right, well then, let's look at the negatives, because you two are straight on them. You're giving full credit to Norwich. We're not doing them a disservice. They were value for money for the 3 points on Saturday. Who's to blame then, Sean? Where does the fault lie? Were the players in week two? All right, we can look at Steve Bruce and maybe tactically he's got it wrong. Apparently there's rumours coming out that players don't know how they should be playing. They don't know the philosophy they should be playing. They don't know the identity of the club. But also, is there a little bit of blame, or does it lie with the players in the sense that in week two, we've got to have more fight than that. Got to have much more intensity than that. We're playing a newly promoted side. We know it's their first home game back in the Premier League. They're going to fight for every ball. They're going to fight till the 90th minute. We need to be up for this today. We need to match them.
The thing is that Steve Bruce just came from that division, you know, where Norwich have been promoted from. So really speaking, he should have knew the tactics of what they were going to come up with, how they were going to play the game. And he didn't show like any of that. You know, there was no tactical sort of play going on throughout the whole squad. So you've got sort of a few issues going on, where we know from the way that Rafa set the team up, regardless of who we're playing, he had a game plan. So even if it was, look, we're possibly just going to be able to like get a draw or something, but at least we'll get a point on the board, etc, etc, you know. So he played to the strengths of the squad that he had, and if that meant, right, well, we're going to basically play like sort of eight men in defence, then that's how he played the game, you know. And if we're able to nick one on the break, then albeit. But there doesn't seem to be anything. That there's no sort of structure within the team for who they're playing. So I mean, we had Arsenal the week before. It was catastrophic the way that they were set up. Players didn't seem to know what they were doing. Players were being brought on. We've had the same sort of thing with Norwich, where going into that game, I mean, that should have been really, tactically, it should have been sort of close to home for Steve Bruce, you know. He's just come from the Championship at the end of the day, so he should have already had his homework done, you know, and knew the players that he was going up against and how to defend against them, how to counter-attack against them. And we didn't see any of that, you know. So, really speaking, we've got reports of the players. So Mutu and Miggy are both saying that they don't understand what they're supposed to be doing on the pitch when they're facing other teams. So surely that is the responsibility of a manager or a coach in this case, you know. At the end of the day, them to do the homework, the coach and staff to do the homework. Right, you are going to be playing up against such and such, and this is how to play against them. You know, they're not very good on the turn or whatever. Give them that information so that everyone knows what they're doing on the pitch. And our players are saying that they don't. So you have to kind of say, right, well, who should be guiding the players on this, you know? Who should be sitting them down in the training sessions, you know, and getting around the screen and watching how they play, you know? You wouldn't expect a boxer to go in a ring and not know he's an opponent, you know, and how to counter-attack or how to attack and how to win. So why should we be blaming the players when, under Rafa, we've got a very similar squad to what Rafa left?
They knew their role. They knew their job. Yeah. Well, this is the problem then, because a lot of whispers have come out this week. Certain former players have spoken, saying that they've heard whispers. Steve Bruce isn't giving them assignments. They don't know what they're doing. They're not disciplined. The Almiron run, I want to mention that, Lorraine. I want to ask you, because this isn't from him. This was, I saw the quotes. You show me them, Sean. Mm-hmm. We kind of, it's from his camp. Now, yeah. We never know when they're from the camp. It could have well been him, and it's been leaked by his camp, blah, blah, blah. But when things aren't going well, how easy is it to write something on a social media and go, you know, because we know it's going to be a clickbait. We know everyone wants to talk about Newcastle. We know it's a big issue with Bruce and Ashley. You're like, now the players don't like. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? How easy is it to create those whispers? Because we haven't actually heard that from the player himself, have we, Laurie?
We haven't, but it's not like it's just Almiron who we're hearing this about. We've heard it about Muto as well, who doesn't strike me at all as the sort of player who causes a fuss in the dressing room. I don't know about you, Sean.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I mean, he always seems completely disciplined when from my experience of him. We heard about it, about Willems in the first game when he came on, and that was the mistake that led to the goal at Arsenal, where he came on, he didn't know what position he was playing, he was completely lost up the pitch. Maitland-Niles got in behind, and you can't give Aubameyang that sort of chance more than once in a game. So I think, yes, you can say, yeah, we don't know if it's exactly come from the player, but you've got to say that it absolutely is concerning that at this point in the season, we're already talking about three or four players in the squad who potentially don't know what positions they're playing. And if we're talking about three or four players that where it's gone public that they potentially don't know what they're doing, like, how can you expect that the rest of the players have that confidence in the manager as well? I think it's a bad omen.
This isn't me, by the way, defending Steve Bruce's performance or Newcastle's performance, because they certainly were not good, to say the least, on Saturday. Definitely Norwich deserved the points. But just trying to offer the other perspective, because when it was pre-season, and I spoke to Laurie, I spoke to you, Sean, we spoke about, players were saying, oh, it's great since Steve came in. You know those reports, they was in the Chronicle, they said, oh, he's given us, you know, he talks to us more than Rafa ever did, he's an arm around the player, we know what we're doing, there's this cohesion. And we could have... We can label this more employee speak. You know, Steve Bruce has just come in. We have to say those things. But now, 2 weeks in, how things are so fickle and they change so quick. Now it's, well, Steve Bruce isn't giving us our assignments. We don't know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Is there an element, Sean, 2 weeks before when it was pre-season, we were saying, this is great?
Well, this was all coming from Matt Ritchie. And within that, he was kind of bigging up Bruce. And it was kind of that one of them sort of, kind of what you would get from a team captain. And, you know, like sort of a morale boosting speech and stuff about, come on, get behind Steve Bruce and in this, that and the other. And it's been great, and it's been like training's good and everything was all great. This was all coming from Matt Ritchie, who came under criticism for it, because it looked very much like it was a PR stunt from the club. We had a similar thing with Lascelles, sort of saying, come on, like when we're losing a few games, get behind the club and blah, 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 and the team and things. And so we've been here before with Newcastle, and probably every other club has had this as well, you know, where you get like the pep talk coming through. It did scream a little bit of a PR stunt, and like I say, Richie did come under criticism for it, but really from where they were with Rafa, and the squad sort of said, oh, the training sessions are really hard, they're not enjoyable, etc, etc. So, and they did complain about it, and Rafa didn't maybe speak that much, he wasn't like a friend to them and stuff, but he was there to do a job, and he got on with that job, and he was disciplined. And if they didn't enjoy the training sessions and they found it hard work, bloody good. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, they're going there to work hard. They get paid good money for it. So at the end of the day, if they think, all right, well, under Steve Bruce, everything's just a walk in the park and it's all great, and he's putting his arm around him and he's like, I love you. And, you know, then that's great. But he's he's not getting results, is he? You know?
It's a results-based business.
Exactly. So if he wants to be all lovey-dovey and friendly, but it doesn't work when they're actually playing against teams, then that's no good. So, and it's going to be tough for Steve even to turn that round, where now he has to be a disciplinary, you know. So, you know, it's just sort of counterproductive, isn't it?
Yeah, the other thing I would say on that point as well is, you know, on the flip side, we've also seen people like Perez say, I might well have stayed if Rafa Benitez had stayed. Like, that's clearly him prioritising one manager over another and thinking that, so this manager of Rafa Benitez has left and a gulf of class has left the club, and, you know, he's gone somewhere where he, I think fairly, thinks has more ambition at the minute. The one other person we've heard comments like the like of Richie and Lascelles as well was Jonjo Shelvey in pre-season at the PL Asia Cup. And when you look at his example, I mean, there's no doubt that Jonjo Shelvey has the tools in the bag to be a top player if he can pull it out consistently. But the problem is he'll play two quality balls in a game and then he'll ping the rest out. And the reason that he wasn't playing under Rafa Benitez is not because Rafa Benitez didn't rate his potential, because Rafa Benitez came out time and time again and said that Jonjo, you know, he's a really good passer of the ball, he's got all this about him. But there were players who were doing a better job. Isaac Hayden was playing really well in the centre of midfield. Obviously Sean Longstaff had come in and had done really well. Obviously I know Shelvey also had injuries, but, you know, I think it's very easy for him then to come out and say, oh, well, yeah, I like Steve Bruce better, because Steve Bruce is not the sort of manager who changes things up tactically. He's going to pick a team and he's going to stick with it. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if for the next five games we play the same team, don't change the formation, and we lose the lot.
Well, there is so much to unpack with Newcastle United. Player problems, issues. One man who might be in the know is Mick Martin, and we're going to be talking to him next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio by Love Sport's very own Laurie Callis and Newcastle United from Supporters Trust, Sean Wade. I'm also delighted to say on the phone with us now, Mick Martin, ex-Newcastle midfielder. Mick, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a bit of your time tonight. Not the greatest start for Newcastle in the Premier League season so far. Not the start they had in mind. A decent performance against Arsenal last week, but it all unfolded drastically to Norwich on the weekend. What did you make of Newcastle on the weekend, Mick?
To be honest with you, Charlie, obviously like everybody else, I was hugely disappointed. I saw them against Arsenal. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, mate. Yeah, sorry, mate.
Yeah, I saw the Arsenal game and I saw the St Etienne game, the pre-season game, and St Etienne, I thought they'd done quite well. And the Arsenal first half, I didn't think they'd done all that bad, but they looked a bit lost in the second half when Shelvey went off and Arsenal sort of dominated the game and in the end finished up good winners, to be honest with you, you know. So your problem is, obviously Norwich was a problem because they're a team that had been promoted and probably under the previous regime, that game would have finished up an away win for Newcastle because they've done it lots of times last year against lesser teams. But it was hugely disappointing in the end. So, and everybody put their hands up, the manager, the players have all said it wasn't good enough and they've got to do an awful lot better. But they go to White Hart Lane. Sorry, not White Hart Lane. What's the new stadium called?
Still White Hart Lane.
Yeah, new White Hart Lane, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It's irrelevant, Mick. Don't worry.
Yeah, but, I mean, going down there against them, having played so badly against Norwich, it looks like it could be three defeats on the trot. And then you got pressure against, I think it's Watford at home the following week. So we just got to wait and see how things go, you know.
Hi, Mick. I know there's been a lot of been made about Joe Linton and Almiron being somewhat isolated, and they've actually come in for a little bit of unfair criticism, in my opinion. I agree with you that Joe Linton especially looked really good in pre-season, and I think we've seen enough from last season from Almiron to know that he's got the potential to be a top player, especially you know, given his pedigree from Atlanta. I just wanted to know, we were talking just a little bit earlier about the formation and essentially playing three central midfielders. It strikes me that you can't really expect anything other than two forwards to be isolated when we're not using our width of the fullbacks, and we're essentially playing three central midfielders. As a midfielder yourself, is that something that that you would agree with in terms of how important is it to link that midfield?
Well, it's hugely important, but the manager has got to decide exactly what system suits him. At this stage, they've had no luck. And normally, Steve Bruce is he plays 3-5-2. It really hasn't worked for him. And there's a problem at this particular moment in time because having lost your first two games and possibly losing your third, players lose confidence in a manager because they're very, very hard to stick at the same system. Either he sticks at the same system or comes up with another system that suits Newcastle. As I said, in the previous regime, you knew what you were doing. The players knew what their jobs were at. And I know it's an early stage for Steve Bruce and he's still getting to know the players. But, you know, you see little things coming out in the press, complaining. A couple of players are complaining about a lot of things like training and preparation. And I noticed a piece in the paper yesterday from Paul Dummett, and he was saying about the warm-up prior to the game against Norwich, he sensed something wasn't right, so the warm-up wasn't right. So it's hugely, hugely strange at the moment in time, you know. But they've got to get into it pretty quickly, otherwise they're going to be chasing it. It was similar last year, to be honest with you, Charlie. The early start of the season with Rafa was poor. The fixtures were hard, and they didn't get much out of it. But after that, they played against the lesser teams, and they started picking up points. But not too sure whether they're capable, because confidence will be hugely low if they get beaten Saturday. And then the pressure is hugely on at home against Watford, and the Watford manager and players will know that, and they're going to get after us. So we'll just have to wait and see.
With that in mind, Mick, though, I'm just curious to know how you think Newcastle should approach this game against Tottenham, because we could easily sit back and play defensive, or we could go at them, and you know, either way, we could lose 5-0 probably. So what is the right approach?
I would set it up as, you know, park the bus, to be honest with you, because I don't think against Tottenham would be good enough to take them on. You might get... I'll tell you what's a huge miss. Edlund's a huge miss as a right wing back and pushing on, because he's a big importance in Newcastle. Even though he's only a full back, but he's got huge amount of energy, gets forward and creates chances, to be honest with you, by whipping stuff into the box. But you can't do that away against Tottenham, a big, big team who spent a lot of money and have top players playing for them, and you're low on confidence, so it's a hard one on Saturday.
Mick, you mentioned then that Dummett's comments about the warm-up at Norwich game, saying very strange that warm-up. But how strange is this? Because Steve Bruce, he's not a young, fresh new manager. He's managed many clubs in the Premier League, managed many clubs in the Championship. He knows how football works. He's been there, he's done it himself. Why is the warm-up strange? Why is the tactics not being done? It's not a new process for him. Why is this happening?
Well, I have no idea, to be quite honest with you. It's a fairly straightforward thing in warm-ups. You know what you do. You know your preparation is right. You know what your job is when you get out onto the pitch, and then you go and perform as well as you can. Going back in the period, you know, and I hate relating to it when I was playing. I always played under good captains at Manchester United. It was Bobby Charlton, and then Martin Buchan followed it, and then I went to West Brom. Johnny Giles was the captain and manager, big, big influence. And then followed by John Wyle, who was a big hammer thrower, centre-half, but demanded more from players. And then when I came to Newcastle and got the captain's job, I kind of done that too. I was very, very hard on players if they weren't doing their job. And I didn't even go to the touchline to ask the manager what's happening. I just organised it on the pitch myself. And I think this is a responsibility in relation to captaincy, that they should see what the problems are in the course of the game to go and address it themselves, to be honest with you, you know?
Going back, John, Mick, to when you were playing and stuff and things for Newcastle, you know, if getting a couple of struggling results on the belt and you being the captain, you know, would rally the team. Do you think that there's any of that going on with Lascelles at the minute? Because he seems to be very quiet, and it's just, there doesn't seem to be a great deal of direction coming from the manager the coach. You know, the captain himself doesn't seem to be driving the team forward. So, I mean, I know we can pick fault with what's going on with the training and the warm-ups, etc. And that's screaming out that it is Steve Bruce's fault. But when them lads are on the pitch, they've still got to give it the all. You know, they are professional footballers. Well, you know, so how much are you seeing on the pitch with the players where you must be thinking, well, hold on a second, you need to be driving this a little bit more yourselves?
Well, they know the jobs in the first place. First and foremost, you don't have to look to the touchline and say to the manager, what do you want me to do? I see managers in the touchline pointing to players, trying to put them into positions where he wants them to be, but nobody's looking in back to the dugout. So there is a big responsibility on the captain, and he's seeing it on the pitch, you know, and no matter how much the coach shouts on the touchline, you can't hear what he's saying. So you've got to go and say, point your finger. Mm-hmm. Whether you're playing well or whether you're playing bad, it doesn't make any difference. You're the captain, and you've got to say to players, right, oi, this fella's causing a problem. You sit there for 10, 15 minutes and don't let him put us under pressure. Exactly. And wide players, you say, you've got to drop back when we're under pressure. You know, so it's a big responsibility for the captain. But I don't know. Most of my captains I played under were loud and aggressive, which I liked, to be honest with you. I don't know whether Lascelles is that. He's a good player, and he's been playing. He played well under the previous regime, but the new regime hasn't kicked off yet, and it's not causing problems, but it's a concern.
Well, with this whole 3-5-2 sort of setup that Bruce has got going on, and the team itself, obviously, that is mostly inherited from Rafa. Rafa had them playing as a 5-3-2 a lot of the time.
So yeah, but don't forget that they had Rondon and they had Perez.
True.
Who were decent players at the end of the day, scoring 15 and 13 goals, whatever it was last season, and a big bonus for Newcastle and staying up in the Premiership. But we don't know what Joe Linton, Almiron, and St. Maximin. Mm-hmm. He looks a good player. Joe Linton doesn't like to be isolated. Almiron seems to be struggling in relation to what position he's playing in. Mm-hmm. When I saw him playing first when he came to Newcastle, I thought, wow, this fella's going to cause all sorts of problems. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't happened for him, you know? And he needs to get involved and he needs to score a goal sooner rather than later. Otherwise, his confidence is going to go low.
Mick, we know that obviously Newcastle haven't made the best start to life in the Premier League, but we also know that they didn't want Steve Bruce at the helm. They also want Ashley out. How much is this hanging over the players and the team? Because it was already messy before we kicked off in the Premier League. Does this impact the players, what's happening with the ownership and the front office?
Well, the uncertainty probably does. Mike Ashley, you know, he's a big businessman. He's got lots of money. Whether he's good in relation to the football situation is very, very questionable. So, in relation to Mike, I don't know. But in relation to players, as I said to you before, they know their responsibility. They know how to play. They should know how to organise. And that's about it, really.
It was just disappointing with Mike while he had Rafa, and he didn't back him, essentially, did he? Let's face it. I mean, Rafa wanted
to. You've got to forget that because that's history now, you know.
Yeah.
And as I said prior to the appointment at Steve Bruce, I didn't see it happening. I remember speaking to Alan Shearer about it, and Alan Shearer says, I'd hate him to take it because he's a cracking boy, and I know him quite well as well. And I'd hate to see him being under pressure, having been a Newcastle supporter from a kid. But pressure is looming very, very, very much so now, having lost 2, possibly losing 3 against Tottenham on Saturday, and then having to face Watford at home, which comes huge pressure the following week.
It certainly is, Mick. Thank you so much for coming on tonight and giving us some of your time. We really appreciate you there. Mick,
no, it's a pleasure, boys. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Mick. Thanks, Mick. All the best. Mick Martin there, ex-Newcastle midfielder. Very interesting what he had to say on a few things there. You know, maybe... It is hanging over the team. It is hanging over the players. Next, we're going to be talking about some of the good that the players are doing, because we need some positivity in this show, in this studio, and then we're going to be looking at the Spurs game.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Sean Wade from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust and Love Sport's very own legend, Laurie Callis. Great to have you both in the studio. We are talking, of course, Newcastle. They went down to Norwich 3-1 this weekend. Not the best of starts in the Premier League. We just heard from Mick Martin, ex-Newcastle midfielder, all about the team and maybe the hangover that they're facing from all the outside problems, the drama up on Tyneside. But let's look at some of the good things that are happening, because Laurie, you mentioned then that a certain player has visited the Newcastle United food bank, and this is just a genuine lovely story, isn't it? And a great touch from a player that's only recently joined.
Yeah, I'm just actually laughing at how you've written his name down on the sheet here. But yeah, I mean, he just seems to have absolutely just got on board with what the fans are all about since he's arrived, Sam Maximan. I mean, he's great on Twitter if you don't follow him. He's really funny. But yeah, just immediately, any fans who have tried to get photos with him, he's been absolutely up for it. And yeah, pretty much the day he signed, he got loads of tweets saying, could you come to the Newcastle fans food bank, which is really important to Newcastle fans. And credit to him, he's gone along. And yeah, he just seems like a really good ambassador for the club. He actually reminds me a lot in terms of how he is with the fans of Hatton Ben Arfa. And I remember one time when Hatton Ben Arfa, he'd fallen out with various people and he wasn't starting, and he went and I think it was the Gallagher that he was in, I'm not sure, but he went and he stood in the crowd just in his normal clothes and went to the game. And Alan Saint-Maximin actually comes with a similar sort of reputation to Hatton Ben Arfa from his former teams. You know, he's the sort he'll won't want to play, and you know, he's a bit of a flair player, but he's the sort of player actually who could, in footballing terms, really save games for us. So I really would love to see him be really good this season. There's my positive for the show. You won't get another one.
Sean, can you just believe that when we came back, I really G'd up Laurie. I said, love sport legend. And then he added me for how I phonetically put it so I wouldn't get it wrong. So I'm trying to show a personal respect. Can you believe that? The friendship is well and truly over. It was a bit like Newcastle or Norwich. You've just absolutely Norwiched me there. 3-1, hat-tricked me right out the game. But we mentioned then he did go and visit the food bank and he got asked, didn't he? Someone said on Twitter, you should come down. Bearing in mind he's just joined. I know, like, we want to see players score. We want to see our players, you know, put in for the badge, win us games. But how much will the people take to this in the community up north? We know how close-knit Newcastle are as a club and as a community. Straight away, he's only just joined. He only, you know, it's a few weeks ago and already doing something like that. Is he like, does he almost instantly become a fan's favourite?
I think definitely. I mean, you can't take it away from him. I mean, I know Colin Whittle and Bill Cochran, who sort of are running the food bank, and they started it up. Colin Whittle was a ex-board member from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust, and it was actually basically the Newcastle United Supporters Trust that started off the food bank. And I mean, it's an absolutely fantastic cause. Can't speak highly enough for it. And having players getting involved and helping out is absolutely amazing, let alone when they've only just joined. And I did see the comment that was on Twitter, and it was just someone wanted to give a shout out for the food bank or something, you know.
Yeah.
And that's basically where it's came from. But at the end of the day, he's got involved and got himself down there. So good on him at the end of the day, you know. I mean, really speaking, we need a bit more of that by players up and down the
100%.
Country.
100%. These are the important issues. I think when we have had a down week about football, our team's not got the result we wanted, we are feeling a little bit low in the studio. Hearing stories like this, it just sort of takes you away from football, the bigger picture, and you know what, this is what is important. The fact he's done it sort of warmed me a little bit anyway.
Yeah, the other thing I absolutely love about him is on the first week that he signed, he was pictured everywhere wearing his Newcastle shirt. He was down Eldon Square, like,
he's
shopping
in bed.
Yeah, he was sleeping in it.
I
absolutely love it. So yeah,
he's delighted to play for Newcastle. Yeah. Come on.
But he's even said he was going to give his top away to charity as well, to raise some money. That's where it came from, with the food bank. So he was asleep in bed and he took a selfie with his top on, and someone said, oh, like, would it be able to have it? And he said, I'd love to give it to you, you know. And then someone said, what about raising some money and selling it and raise some money for the food bank? And he was, well, what's the food bank? And he's looked into it, you know. Yeah. And at the end of the day, they've been in touch, so it's cracking, you know. Long may it continue.
100%. Yeah, well, you mentioned there that he was wearing the top everywhere he went. Talking of a player who hopefully will be putting the top back on soon, Andy Carroll, he's back in training. I don't know if we covered this on the previous show, but firstly, how happy are you that he's back playing for Newcastle? Were you pleased with the move, and do you want him back in the side? Is he a player that actually, the way we're looking at the minute, we need a bit of a target man up top?
I'm happy to have him back. I didn't want him to go in the first place. It was a bit cruel the way that he was sold, but I mean, it was a massive £35 million.
Huge.
Yeah, into Mike Ashley's back pocket, basically. So he came up through the youth academy. He started with the youth academy from about the age of 9 or something like that, 8 or 9 or something, you know. So he's a local lad. At the time when he played for the first time round, we had sort of a decent setup with the wings, where the balls were being crossed over to him because he's absolutely fantastic with his head, and guaranteed if it crosses over there and it's head height for him, he will put it in the back of the net. When he went to Liverpool, they played a game completely different, and it was ground football.
Blighted with injuries, though, isn't he, Sean?
He's really
struggled with injuries.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if... Has he had a run of bad luck? Is this going to continue? Is it going to be something that he's over? I mean, I don't know. If it's your childhood club, then would you be more inclined to carry on and give that little bit
play
extra?
Play through the pain almost.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, does that sort of that adrenaline kick in that little bit more?
It does when local heroes play in.
Exactly.
There you go. Well, talking of signings then, you mentioned, Laurie, just quickly, are you happy that Andy Carroll's back?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's funny, you mentioned as well about him pulling the shirt on. There was that picture on social media with him and his like 9 kids, all with Carroll 7 on the back outside St James's. I think having another local boy playing for the team is so important to the fans. And let's not forget, like, he is, if he's not injured, a quality player. I mean, it's easy to forget. He was at West Ham for 7 years. And when you think about, I don't know how many games he actually played, but
7.
He has
seven, yeah. 1 a year.
7.5.
He has had a horrendous record. But I mean, he's the sort of player that when he was even getting fit and playing a couple of games, people were still talking about whether we should be taking him to the Euros or taking him to the World Cup.
He was a menace for England. I remember him when he come on in the England games, you know. Like you said, would always, they'd want to put him in the box. He'd always win those headers. But he was a nuisance for defenders, even if he wasn't scoring, you know. It was someone else that to watch out for. Again, we're talking about players and their potential. But I do feel that Andy Carroll could have had a better career if it wasn't for injuries. But, you know, sometimes you can almost further your career by staying at your club. Mm-hmm. Is there a little bit of that? Because sometimes when you do move for the better, you go to the Liverpools, the Man Uniteds, the Chelseas, whoever. I think sometimes that can have a detrimental effect. I reckon if he would have stayed on the path he was at with Newcastle, he would have, his career would have maybe gone from strength
developed
to strength. Yeah, I really believe that. Is there an element of that?
I think so. I mean, it didn't. I don't think he wanted to go to Liverpool. It was very much a move that was, the rug was pulled under his feet, basically. And with that, you know, he should have stayed at Newcastle. He was, unfortunately, had many, many bad injuries while he was at West Ham, and he didn't get a lot of gameplay. But I think now that he's back at Newcastle, it's, you know, it's a few years on, or is it 10 years on since he went, and have we now got the wingers that are going to be getting the crosses over to him? You know, it's asking a lot of Richie to be delivering the crosses from the left and the right, and I don't know where it's going to come from with the formation that Bruce is playing at the minute.
Well, this is it. You're going to need to create chances. You're going to need to have much more possession. There was a feature on Match of the Day this weekend that said Almiron and Joe Linton can't play together. They're not, you know, there's no link-up play. Where's the chemistry? I thought it was a bit strong considering it's two games in. He's just signed. Almiron only arrived in January. But, you know, is it a fault of, we can't really look at them two. I mean, Newcastle won that day. They're not getting the service, you know what I mean? They were mentioning the space between them as a two. Was it a little bit unfair to them two, Laurie?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've already said it about six times today that I just think the formation is completely illogical. And the thing is, with Almiron particularly, in the first half of the Arsenal game, he was the best player on the pitch by a mile. Arsenal weren't trying to get him behind at all. I'm not saying we played well as a whole in the game, but I thought that Almiron looked like he could be really threatening. And I think that if we're going to be playing that sort of formation, where with the three in midfield, you almost want one of those players to be a more forward-minded player, and I'd be tempted to bring Almiron back into a midfield three and then put someone else up there with Joe Linton, because I don't know, it's hard to say, because, you know, are you going to play him as a number 10? Are you going to play him as a winger? Are you going to play him as an attacking midfielder? He hasn't played in the same position last season and this season. So after two games, if you're going to say, well, it's not working, a little bit harsh. As you said, they're both new players.
They are both new players. Talking of new players, just quickly, I know I keep changing subject. Let's look at a few of the new players that have joined, because apparently I saw today that a few of the players that have joined Newcastle all have the same agent. This is supposedly what Rafa wasn't happy about. All of the players that they wanted to sign that he didn't want to sign, or were doing in so with his knowledge, they've got the same agent. Bit of fishy waters there. Laurie, what do you make of this? The players that are all signing, and weirdly, they have the same agent.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of the Graham Carr sort of era of signings, where we were just signing everyone who was under 24 years old from France.
It was like, all through the same agent.
Yeah,
as well.
The likes of Moussa Sissoko and
Package deal.
Remy Cabello, etc. Florian Thauvin. So, yeah, and obviously some of them came off quite well. Like Kabay did really well before they sold him to PSG. And, you know, like it worked to a point, but it's the sort of thing where clearly Rafa Benitez wanted to be in charge of the transfers. From what it looks like, they offered him the same deal without being in charge of the transfers anymore, which is just ludicrous, but obviously we've covered that a lot. But yeah, in terms of, it just doesn't seem healthy to me that, I mean, what it screams out is football being run as a business again. If you've got a client who's essentially helping you get a better deal potentially on players so that you're signing a lot with them, it's almost like paying an agent commission, essentially, isn't it?
Oh yeah, 100%.
I don't know what Sean thinks, but
well, the thing is that there was the article with Mike Ashley, and he said that going back from January, he practically went running to tell Rafa that we've got Joe Linton for 40 million. And he was jumping through hoops, and Rafa wasn't. He was like, well, I don't think he's worth that. And he didn't really see him in the squad the way it was. There was other players that he would have preferred. And Rafa was also saying, well, really, we do need to sort out my contract as well, because time's ticking. But take we're back a few months, and then Mike Ashley said it was live on, I think it was Sky Sports or something like that. Mike Ashley then was saying, let's be categorically clear about this. Rafa Benitez picks the squad. He chooses them. He picks the players. So where has it gone from where Rafa was in charge to all of a sudden Mike Ashley running to Rafa Benitez saying, oh, we've got this player and we've got that one. And, you know, so really it's screaming out that Rafa wasn't actually choosing the players again, you know. So you could understand why you'd be a bit bemused, because it's definitely mixed signals that we're getting from Mike Ashley. If he's saying that the manager has full control and he selects the players, he buys the players, he chooses the squad, etc., etc. But then all of a sudden he's slipped up, in my opinion, because he's turned around blatantly in an exclusive saying that he was going to Rafa with players. And we all have an opinion that Mike Ashley doesn't know a great deal about football.
Yeah, I just want to really quickly go back to the Almiron-Joe Linton partnership thing, because the more that I think about it, it's actually really annoying me.
We've got his blood boiling now. There's a hole, Sean, I've just attacked it.
But when you think about, we've watched him be so successful in the MLS, and he made Joseph Martinez be an incredible player. He now scores every single game. Like, when you see MLS highlights, he scored a goal, Martinez, and he made him a quality player, and they unquestionably had a fantastic partnership. So there's no reason why he can't have a partnership with another South American striker.
Massively. He was the player to watch in the MLS. I will not have this talk. He's only been here for 6 months. It's a new league. Massive difference in class, physicality, intensity. I will not have him labelled a bust. I will be on the stands not having it, Sean. Almiron will be a player to watch for years to come. Talking of players to watch, it is a Spurs preview this weekend. We're going to be talking to Ricky Sachs next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Laurie Callis and Sean Wade of the Newcastle United Supporters Trust. Great to have you both in the studio. We've covered a lot of Newcastle tonight. The good, the bad, the ugly. Now, though, it is Tottenham on the weekend. Another tough test away at Spurs. I'm delighted to say we have got Ricky Sachs on the line with us. Ricky Sachs from The Last Word on Spurs. The Last Word on Spurs on tomorrow night for 2 hours. They can be talking a little bit about the Newcastle game as well. Ricky, thank you so much for joining us tonight and giving us a bit of your time. How are you feeling, and what should Newcastle fans expect from the game this weekend?
Cheers, boys. I hope you're well. It's not going to be easy, this game. I think Newcastle, it's a type of game where a lot of them will kind of take for granted, expect Spurs to get the 3 points. Listen, I'm hoping Spurs do turn up and get the 3 points, but it won't be easy. We're playing a Newcastle side that they're under some pressure, of course. And to be fair, they've got nothing to lose in this game. I don't think Newcastle will be expecting to come in and get a result. And that's where there's an element that they can come and play with a bit of freedom, I think. Whilst, you know, Bruce will want to get that first win under his belt. And there won't be an expectancy for him to do that at Tottenham. And that concerns me a little bit by the fact they can play with a bit of freedom. From what I've seen in Newcastle, there's been periods where they haven't played that bad. They've been unlucky, especially in that first game of the season against Arsenal. I thought they were really, really unlucky to not come away with anything from that game. You know, you could argue that, you know, the game of the week before wasn't that great. But from a Spurs perspective, we're welcoming back Heung-min Son, who's a massive, massive plus to us. I don't think we've seen the Spurs team settle yet. You know, we're yet to see Lo Celso, we're yet to see Sessegnon. And Dembele doesn't look 100% fit yet. So both teams obviously have had their issues throughout the summer with transfers and with squads, and obviously Newcastle had a change of manager. So I think at the moment, you know, both teams aren't really where they would want to be in terms of their squads. I mean, Spurs will be happy to get 4 points from six so far, but by all means, I don't think it's going to be an easy game at all whatsoever, Chaz.
I'm just wondering whether you watched our performance against Norwich, Ricky, to be honest. I was just listening to you list all your players there and just thinking, oh, we have to play them, we have to play them, we have to play them. No, I'm just interested. Obviously, it's going to be a completely different game for you lot this week to the Man City game. You had very few shots, I know, against Man City, and, you know, it was a great point to get. Do you prefer playing a team like Man City? I know, obviously, you don't want to play Man City every week, but obviously in the Champions League last season, you did a number on them. You did really well. Do you, as a, we'll call Spurs a top team now, I'll do you a favour there. As a fan of a top team, do you prefer watching your team go to a club who are, let's be honest, fighting relegation, and they're kind of really should be battling for every point? Or do you prefer almost playing as the underdog?
I think it suits Spurs, to answer your question, playing as the underdog to some degree. They seem to, you know, get results that they're not expected to, like the Man City game. No one really expects us to get a result, unless you're honest about it. If VAR didn't go in our favour, we would have lost that game. You know, you saw the stats out there. They're almost like FIFA stats in a way. I still don't quite know how Spurs have come away from a point of that game. And that's what I mean. We haven't really played that well so far in the first two games. You know, Aston Villa, for 70 minutes, Villa were well-deserving of being in the lead, and Spurs, Eriksen's introduction changed the game. So, at the moment, we haven't seen Spurs hit their full peak. We're only a couple of games in. Newcastle, yeah, I did see them at the weekend. They weren't impressive at all against Norwich. You could argue and say, you know, they simply in that game there. I don't quite know what's happened. You know, Bruce, to some degree, there's a lot of obviously you guys know better than me with the fans. The fans haven't really bought into the manager. It's a real tough situation up there, but they have got decent players. And on their day, Newcastle have shown they can be a dangerous team, which is why, as a Tottenham fan, I don't think you can take any game for granted. We've been there before with Spurs where you expect a home banker. You expect a win. You just can't ever approach a game like that in the Premier League. I think it's such an unforgiving league that if you don't turn up and play to 100%, you can be found out. So Spurs have to go into that game at the top of it. They play their maximum, and fingers crossed we should get the result.
Hi, Ricky, it's Sean here. I'm just, you know, I'm listening to what you're saying, and to be quite honest, I think looking at the game coming up with Spurs, you're going to be facing a Newcastle squad that are quite down in the mouth, you know. They're not, unless Steve Bruce can turn them all around and get them with the, to sort of pecker up a little bit, but I don't see we're getting anything from the game. I don't think that you're looking at a decent, sort of strong squad. I don't think mentally they're going into the game strong, and I think that he was on a much better position. You know, really speaking, I can see we're getting beat about 8-0. And that's it. Yeah.
Ricky, they are really positive in this studio.
Chaz, I hope you've got some mountains on the line there with
them. I think Kane could have another hat trick. So yeah, no, I'm not hoping for anything, to be fair. It'll be nice to see a new stadium for the fans that are travelling down. But
definitely, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's ironic, you know, if you look back sort of what maybe is 10, 12 years ago, definitely sort of 12 years ago, and you look where Newcastle and Spurs were, they were both sort of very, very similar sort of position-wise on the table. We had very sort of similar sort of setups going on with the squads that we had. But it just goes to show you But how much sort of some investment can bring to a squad, you know, and I mean, hats off to Tottenham. Yous have got a lovely stadium there. Yous have had some serious investment.
Sean, you support Newcastle.
I know,
you're reaming off everything about the thing is,
But the thing is that Tottenham have got everything going on that really speaking, if you look back sort of what, 10 years ago, we were a neck and neck, you know. So, and now Tottenham are, you would say, they're in that top six without a shadow of a doubt. They've overtook and they're going to overtake, you know. Now it could be edging for a top four team, and it just goes to show you with a bit of sort of a bit of drive and a bit of money really being well spent. So no, good on yous at the end of the day. But
listen, football's a cycle. Your time will come again. Newcastle are a big club, you know. You've got, you know, support there. I think it's incredible the support you get there. Listen, I want to see you pushing towards the top of the league. That's where Newcastle should be. You know, you've had some wonderful players in the past. I think once the ownership does change hands, and hopefully for your guys, take it falls into someone that actually cares about the club and wants it push on.
Ricky, you're making us cry in here. You're making us cry. We hear this all the time. I want to ask you really quickly. Fantasy team. I know it's a good bet. We're going to lose some points. Spurs are going to get some points. But Lucas Moura's in form. Got him in my team. Do I keep him or... Son's a bit expensive, but Son's coming back.
Yeah.
Who's going to get the points?
I think he'll go with Moura. I think, obviously, Sonny hasn't started a game yet this season. Listen, we'd like to have him back. I can see Son starting on the bench for Tottenham and being introduced late into the game because he hasn't really had the opportunity to feature in the first two. So, and Moura's just come off the back of, again, a wonderful performance for Tottenham. I'd be amazed if he doesn't start, but then I was amazed he didn't start the Champions League final, chap. So what do I know, to be honest? But I would put the money on Moura starting on the weekend with Sonny on the bench.
Ricky, very, very quickly, what is your score prediction for the weekend? Bearing in mind these two, I mean, it's tears in the studio, so say whatever you want, mate.
Sure, I feel so bad. I feel like after I tried to cheer him up, I'm going to hammer him now and go 5-1 Spurs.
Oh, Rick, 5-1 Spurs. Ricky, we'll look forward to speaking to you tomorrow. Ricky Sachs there, chap, from Last Word on Spurs. 5-1, very quickly, Sean, Lurie, predictions for the weekend. I'm almost asking the worst here. I know what's coming.
8-0.
No, Sean, come on.
I'm being serious, yeah.
You're being serious,
8-0? 8-0, yeah.
I can't take that seriously, but 8-0. Laurie, what are you saying?
I think 4 is a very serious chance. 4-0 to Tottenham, obviously.
Right, I'm going to... Sean's gone 8-0, which is probably a little bit out there. But I'm feeling bold. I'm going to go Newcastle 5-0. This has been the Newcastle Fan Show. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.